Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Thursday. I tell you, this whole morning has gone crazy. On a Friday morning, we take a look at news stories that are being put out by the media, and we also see how the media is doing as well. David has his own website, themediabeat.us. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Good to be with you, reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City.
And this will be the final New York City report.
It's the last time for a while that I do come from New York City. I'm off to Ireland again. It always gives me a different perspective, a welcome perspective for me on this crazy world of the media. I'll be in Dublin for a couple of weeks.
And it is a crazy media nowadays. I mean, I'm old enough at 68 to remember a stable media where there were news bureaus by CBS, ABC, NBC. Those news bureaus have all been cut back, and now they're social media. So things can kind of get jumbled and dumbled and doubled. But I guess we want to start off with what's going on at the U.S. Capitol, and with Steve Bannon. This is going to be a long fight. People shouldn't understand that this fight to get Bannon to testify is not going to be short-lived, even though they're going to bring him in contempt.
No, that's right. The House of Representatives may have voted, and this includes Republican votes, a significant handful of Republican votes here, deciding to pursue criminal contempt against Steve Bannon, Trump's one-time close advisor, and part of the assumption in this case, of course, is that he became a close advisor again in time for the 6th of January incursion into the Capitol buildings by Trump supporters. And now that the House has made that decision, the question goes to the Department of Justice. Will the Department of Justice pursue a criminal contempt charge against Steve Bannon? I think we can assume from everything in the political winds that are blowing strong enough for us to register that the Department of Justice will do that. But at the same time, there will doubtless be much legal wrangling as Bannon resists, still continues to resist, appearing before the House and giving evidence about that 6th of January riot. He's doing so, of course, on Trump's orders, and he's employing the tactic that Trump wants to employ for himself and others. There are others being called to that House committee, of course, who have so far declined to go. People who are actually on the payroll of the White House at the time, Steve Bannon, it was just a personal connection that established him as an advisor again to the president, and he's claiming, as I say, with Trump's complete encouragement and in fact insistence that Bannon, along with the others, of course, is claiming executive privilege, the cloaking principle in law that is a little fuzzy around the edges, I have to say, about what entitles you to keep silent if you've been a member of the chief executive of this country's private circle while he's making decisions. It's in a way an understandable principle. You want your leaders to be able to keep their counsel to themselves, quite literally, while in the process of making decisions. There's a limit necessarily to complete transparency if you're the nation's most senior decision taker, but of course it's often been used, it's often been abused rather, as a cloak for nefarious activity. I suppose the most infamous example of that was Richard Nixon's attempt to invoke executive privilege when he and his circle were being investigated for the for the Watergate scandal. So yes, it's not going to lie down, this story. It's going to keep on running. You're quite right. We haven't seen the last of it just because the House has made this really quite extraordinary decision and extraordinarily bipartisan to some significant degree.
And even though Donald Trump has been banned from Twitter, he put a statement out and used other people's account just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And this came out yesterday, a statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. Now listen to this, listen to this. The insurrection took place on November 3rd, Election Day. January 6th was the protest.
Yeah, interesting rewriting of history, huh?
He just can't help himself. It's, you know, and then you add that to the comments he made about Colin Powell's death. It just shows how basically emotionless this man really is.
Well, certainly out of touch with anything that would normally come under under the rubric of ordinary common human decency, I think. In the case of the Powell comment, certainly, which I won't deign to quote. But yeah, here again, showing himself to be in a world of his own, I suppose, is a kind way of putting it. You know, we're going to have to get used to, maybe we aren't, but there are signs that Trump wants to get us in the habit of listening to his every exclamation, because he's building another web presence. He's going to call it the Truth Social. That's the name of his new web presence. It'll be partly an app, partly a website, it's so interesting to see this happen. Since we know, you'll remember, of course, that once out of office, he did try to set up a new media presence as a ex-presidential blog, but that sort of withered away because the number of clicks he was getting, the number of page views he was getting was negligible and sank very fast. But here he is again trying to set up something that looks remarkably like an alternative to Twitter. He's going to call the individual postings that get made on the site truths, in the sense that Twitter has its tweets. He will have his truths. And what's so intriguing about this is the way that some dedicated observers of the financial side of this operation shows that it's an instance in which you know, after years, I guess you'd say, of a build-up in corporate America of a distinct policy of shunning the financial involvement with Donald Trump. I mean, his decades of bankruptcies, loan defaults, his constant litigious business disputes, and of course his outright commercial failures. Corporate America wanted nothing to do with him. But now this new web presence has actually got financial backing, and it's all due to he and his team managing to take advantage of a trend, a fad, I suppose you'd call it, on Wall Street in the last, I don't know, year and a half, of special purpose acquisition companies, SPACs. So it's a somewhat cloak and dagger effort. Companies are not exactly doing what you would normally think they would do, or that is normally expected when they're trying to get public funding, funding on the open market. There's a lot of deviousness goes on with hidden hands at work, to misquote the great Scottish economist Adam Smith. They're involved here are various companies, including a shadowy company that has taken the name of a now defunct but once noble until it crashed stock brokerage company called E.F. Hutton. Now, you might remember that name for its famous TV commercials when it used to say that what was the catch line was when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. Well, this new shadowy E.F. Hutton, which isn't really, is actually another name before it picked that name for itself. It was called Kingswood. But that company has gone into this business and actually merged with a Trump company itself. That was only formed back in February, with little attention being paid to it. People thought it was part of Trump's effort to launch his blog. The company is called Trump Media and Technology Group, registered in Delaware. But now we have the launch, or the very imminent launch of the presence of Trump's Truth Social online, but already established is the investment. They got all the money they wanted to make this launch, and we can only look forward to yet more dedicated efforts by Trump to speak to the world, and he wants to be listened to, like E.F. Hutton was, I suppose.
Follow the line, and it always leads to money.
Yes, follow the money is always the best adage for people who want to investigate what's going on. Yeah.
Now, I did not stay up for it. Did you see any of Joe Biden's performance on, I think it was CNN last night?
No, I did not.
I saw some clips.
The same grounds, I needed my sleep. But I've been reading about it in the aftermath. What did you think of what was said?
I saw some of the. I googled some of the comments that he made. The thing I like about Joe Biden he's pretty honestly frank, and he says things that are damaging to himself and his administration in the course of answering questions. But he has candor, and so I'll look at that. But that was my takeaway from it is that some of the members of the Democratic Party aren't going to be happy with him. Some of the Republican Party are going to be happy with what he said. But I thought he was fine. I'm so used to now not having the hammer thrown every time you see a president of the United States on TV. I think he did an okay job. Yeah, he made some slip-ups, but he does have candor, and he does. I think he came across okay.
Yeah, as you know, the team around Biden are keeping mostly rather tight controls over his public appearances, and one of the themes behind all that, of course, is that he has a tendency towards candor. Loose lips is what sometimes attributed to him, and the propensity to make a gaffe. I mean, of course, a gaffe in the political world is really defined as saying something that's true inadvertently. and you're right. I mean, he says things that aren't particularly helpful to his own arguments. What emerges from the appearance last night is a whole set of acknowledgements, I think, by him that the road is not easy for this administration, and we know that's absolutely true. And he's a straightforward enough individual, even in a high office, to acknowledge that. And what we get out of last night, I guess, is that he's open to changing the filibuster rule in the Senate, for instance, and also he made it clear, as I read his comments now, that he doesn't see any votes available to him to raise tax rates in order to pay for this massive social agenda he wants to get through with these two major pieces of legislation. And of course that's true, and it goes some way, I suppose, to assure the people who are so concerned about tax levels in this country, and gracious, there are so many of them. I think all in all, his openness on CNN this is a hard thing to judge accurately, yeah. But I'd say it was probably more to his advantage to make this rare at-length appearance under questioning than it was to his discredit or to his disadvantage.
Are we going to have the fanfare here today?
Oh, indeed. Okay. Let's have a fanfare. Our fanfare this week will go to Freakonomics Radio, the radio show that's dedicated to taking a quirky, oddball look at things. Not just economics, although that's where it started. It's always challenging conventional wisdoms and pointing out all the illogical impulses that often influence our human behavior. It was born, as you know, out of a book called Freakonomics, of course, co-authored by Maverick Economist. Called Stephen Levitt and a maverick journalist called Stephen Dubner, and the two Stephens are responsible for the radio show too. The book was a smash bestseller in 2005, and not long after that success, they launched the radio show. Dubner hosts it, and Levitt often appears on it, and of course it's distributed all across the public radio universe. Though I think not on Robin Hood Radio. Maybe you might want to take a look at carrying the show. It's getting close to its 500th edition very soon, and it's last week's show that makes me want to toot the bugle for them. The show last week got down to the absolute basics of our own business and attacked the old constantly arising question that lies at the heart of the communications media, all of them. The question was, why are the media so negative? I hear that all the time. You probably do too. Mm-hmm. Study after study shows that American journalism is exploiting the public's negativity bias, the tendency to want to have news that's negative. I mean, some people blame the media for providing this. The greater truth, of course, is that it is what excites the public most. Bad news, as we know, sells newspapers and drives high TV ratings. And nowadays, of course, we've got social media algorithms that add fuel to the fire of negativity as our main stock in trade. And what the show did really was to present what is at its core a very discomforting assessment, you might say dispiriting assessment. The show actually quotes in detail another economist called Bruce Sacerdote. He's basically saying, to use his words, essentially U.S. major media are expert at giving people what they want. They're particularly talented and profit-maximizing on the basis of that. And yes, it does seem that the public does, we do, want that negativity that characterizes so much news, even though we at the same time complain about it. The public often does. Why is the media so negative is something I do hear all the time. So drama, conflict, disasters, they're the things that are driven to the fore, they are what create the financial success of American media, it's that drive, I guess, that drive to stir people to outrage, I think, which is of course magnified on social media, especially young people. Which, as revealed by Facebook's own research, has been showing that it stirs people, young people especially, to concern, and even to concern, concern deep enough to feel badly about themselves, according to Facebook's own research. That's the unhappy but inevitable conclusion that the show offers for us, presented in a spiky, irreverent delivery, with some unexpected comparisons being made on that radio show and undeniable truths being presented to us, however unwelcome they might be. So for that good work, I toot the horn.
You know, it's interesting. There's always been negative stories on media, but what happened to media is... bringing in panel discussions, 24-hour news channels, because then you're not just reporting a negative story, you're doing it with a fine-tooth comb, and you're doing it for hours upon hours upon hours, and then you add the social media aspect into it. I think if there were less panels talking about the negative stories, people wouldn't think that the media is pushing negative stories just to make money.
Well, yeah, fanning the flames of outrage always works.
Yep.
I mean, at one time it was a matter of buying an example of what used to be called the yellow press, the hysterical, was single page sometimes, things that were on offer on the streets in late 19th century days. The yellow press was the name given to that stuff. But it's not so different now. It's still fanning those flames.
Well, I want to go on to Poland. A very interesting thing happened this week. The EU said yesterday they condemned a ruling by Poland's constitutional tribunal. Poland said basically, the tribunal, that what they want to do takes precedence over some EU laws, and the EU said no. That's not the case at all. This is the EU just going through a real rough time, or are these problems that could shake the EU into some tougher times?
Well, I don't want to go on my anti-English rampage again, but I have to draw the inevitable conclusion that what was predicted when the Brexit movement was starting up in Britain, mostly determined by English citizens, by the way, as we know, the Scottish part of Great Britain, my part originally, was not anti-Europe, never has been, but the English part of Britain was where most of the anti-European sentiment was centered, and one of the fears expressed at the time by those of us with a European outlook was that Brexit would encourage other countries inside the 27 or at that point 28 countries of the EU for fractiousness, for other countries wanting to split away. And in this case, Poland has certainly gone against the grain of European agreements as a whole. What the argument's about is the independence of, in Poland's case, is the independence of the judiciary in a particular country. The overall European policy is, of course, designed to maintain complete separation between the executive branch of government and the justice system. What's happening in Poland is the Poles are asserting their own right to do apply justice in the way that Poles themselves, or rather the current Polish government, somewhat right-wing and tending very clearly in this instance to blur the distinction between an executive part of government and the judicial system. It's interesting that such a fundamental principle as that should be the potential splitting point between one particular country and the European Union as a whole. It's all a sign of, fractiousness, the fact that the European Union is not as solid as it has been. We will, you know, as this dispute continues, we'll have to see who wins out of it. If Poland wins, it may well encourage other countries to take its to take steps away from the common policies that have so distinguished the sense of unity between Europe, although that unity is often hard to discern when it comes to taking combined actions in, on the world stage.
One final thing I want to ask you, and that is one of the things, and I saved the best for last one, I think, is Taiwan and the United States and China. Now, the United States has always backed Taiwan. There's no doubt about it. But we've had a policy where we don't necessarily come out and make statements that would anger China. It's almost kind of let sleeping dogs lie. But last night, President Joe Biden did say that the U.S. would defend Taiwan if China attacked. Now, a lot of people got very upset about that. But really, there is a law that is written in the books in the United States, which says the United States will defend Taiwan and help it defend itself. It's just that no president has ever come out and said it openly.
Sure. Biden tends to say things that are true, even when it's not to his greatest political advantage to do so. And you're right. America has always supported Taiwan, until, of course, it doesn't. A classic case of that was for the many years that Taiwan was occupying China's seat in the United Nations, and that was a matter of huge objection from mainland China. Of course, the Chinese Communist Party just couldn't stand for that, and eventually they actually won in the end, and China is now one of the most predominant countries asserting its influence at the United Nations, and America bowed out from that argument as that process was going on. So their support for Taiwan is not exactly unqualified, I hesitate to try and predict the future, but the idea of America being forced to go into military action to support Taiwan in the face of aggressive tactics by mainland China is a disturbing one, and I imagine that will not be a foregone conclusion. There will be lots of argument about how seriously America will take risky action in support of Taiwan. The political cynic might say when it gets to the point of not being to America's advantage to support Taiwan anymore, then that's when America will, as in other occasions, step back from the edge. But it's very hard to know, of course.
Well, that is a potential. With all the hot spots in the world, even though that is a potential big one, because there's no way around it. Having the U.S. and China in a combat over Taiwan can lead to other countries joining in on both sides.
Sure. I mean, that's one of the inescapable conundrums of our current world. To have a rivalry between America and China is one thing. If it turns into competition and then hostility, then it's a completely different animal entirely in the political bestiary.
Well, David, I want you to have safe travels, and of course, where are we going to be speaking to you next from?
Well, I'll be in Dublin,
okay.
And we'll get the media beat from that part of the world.
All right. Well, have a good trip, and we'll speak to you next week from Dublin.
I'll look forward to that.
Take care, David. David Taraschuk with the Media Beat. Once again, his own website, themediabeat.us, themediabeat.us. But you can also check David out on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand. Click on the Media Beat with David Taraschuk.